podcast for heroes in the world of Overwatch. This is The Payload.
Everybody, welcome to episode number 43. That's right, 43 hold episode, the prime number, right? It's a prime number. 43 is a prime number.
Not divisible. Just barely.
Yep, yeah, just barely. Yeah. Just by one, plus one, minus one. We are an Overwatch podcast brought to you by bluespro.com. Today is October 20th, 2016 from Denver, Colorado. I'm John Horstman, and we're back. This is great. It feels amazing. And with me, of course, is the incredible, indomitable. Is that a word? I need to go to my fact checker. But instead of that, let's go to Rosh. Hey, Rosh.
Hey, it has been a while. I think we said this last time we podcast, but I'm still surprised that I actually miss you guys as much as I really do when we don't have to podcast that week. Like, it's actually really weird for me that I like you guys enough to miss you that much, but I do. So I'm glad to be back. I'm excited for the show this week. I'm ready to get at it.
All right, well, let's do that. But before we do, let's get at Camarillo, California, with our good buddy wearing his Dodgers hat there.
Yeah.
No bias at all. Jimmy Bloxham. Hey, Jimmy.
Oh, come on. I totally have a bias. We're turning this into a baseball podcast now, like Wellmet was when the Royals were in the pennant race. Yeah. It's been a good week. Just been casually playing Quick Match and playing the Halloween event. The Brawl has been really fun, and we'll probably talk about that a lot more later in the show, but it's been a good week.
Good, man. Well, it's good to be back with you. It's been a while, but we're back and it feels good. Let's jump over the border and let's say hi to Kevin Hovdestad. Hey, Kev.
Hey, John. Yeah, what a crazy week. So much Overwatch stuff going on. We get to see all the cool Halloween stuff out in the field. It feels like it's been a long time, even though it really hasn't. I don't know what it is about just the coming and going of this show, having a week off. But yeah, like it's crazy to me. You know, when we started this show, when we got started a year ago, it's been a year. This is the week of our 1 year anniversary of The Payload.
Oh, and pretty cool. That's worthy.
There it is.
Worthy. I got you. I was a little slow.
I paused for you. I waited. It's okay.
No, you did.
It was time Facebook Memories bought up a good memory for me.
Oh, there you go. No. Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, when we started, we often struggled to find stuff to talk about every week. We went bi-weekly for a long time because we weren't sure. And now it feels like you take a week off and you come back and you're like, holy wow, we got a lot to talk about. So. you know, Rosh, we've only had you for a little while, but
I was
Jimmy,
gonna say
John,
it's been
like,
a long year with you guys. Year, it hasn't right? even felt
oh,
like a year.
Okay.
It feels really good. I'm really glad that we're still doing it. I'm happy that the show is as much fun as it has been for a whole year. So thanks, guys.
Yeah. Kudos. Happy birthday, Payload crew. To many more. Let's talk about our week, shall we? Our last 2 weeks. I'm sure they were all eventful. I know at least mine was. Let's talk
just
about
a little bit.
Just a little bit. Rosh, what have you been up to these last couple weeks?
I have actually been on vacation in Florida seeing friends and family. So unfortunately, Overwatch decided that they really disliked me and they released the Halloween patch the day I got to Florida. So I have not really been able to toy around and get any Halloween skins. So now that I'm back in California,
there's only one that matters though, right?
Yeah, and that's the Mercy one. That's the best one.
No way. No way.
Wow, the Mercy player wants the Mercy skin.
I know, shocking, right?
Okay, you know what? One time, I'm going to take Rosh's side. It is for sure the best skin ever.
It's very good.
It's solidly really the best cool. skin in the game right it's now, no really question. Cool.
So yeah, I'm excited.
That's disagree. It, you get one.
Disagree.
He said that I was right, though. He didn't say, you're not wrong.
Yeah, that's really weird. Look at Kevy's. don't know if it's taking some sort of what is it? What are those manners classes? What are they? What are they called? Etiquette. There it is.
Etiquette lessons.
But yeah, I'm excited to be back because I'm excited to play Overwatch and get the Mercy Halloween skin.
Yeah. What if you don't get it?
I have 155 unopened loot boxes, so I have enough to get the 3,000 coins, so I could just buy the skin if I want to. You didn't know I don't open my loot boxes?
I mean,
She's one of those people.
I got my Mercy skin. You guys know better than anybody else, so that's all I play. So there's no reason for me to open loot boxes. I just do it because it drives my stream crazy. Their OCD of seeing 100.
Oh yeah, seeing that on the, yeah, the menu. Oh my god.
Why would it drive them crazy? I don't know. I'm just gonna hang up right
so
now.
Yeah, I'll have enough to buy the skin. I have no issues. I'm not nervous at all.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Jeff Kaplan, if you're listening, just write a line of code. Make it impossible. Have her get like 29.95 credits. Yeah. Can't even craft it. We'll get to that later, by the way. Spoiler alert. Jimmy, what have you been up to this week, man?
Mostly just Quick Match. I've been playing Overwatch pretty casually lately. But yeah, Quick Match and the Brawl has been a lot of fun. Seeing some PvE content in the game is really cool, and I think it's a lot easier to get people together for that than competitive right now. It seems like competitive taking a bit of a backseat a little bit, but Overwatch has been fun. I'm really enjoying it. It's a good place right now, I feel like.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And man, do we have news to talk about. But Kev, just tell us how much Overwatch you've been playing.
Man, I wish I could. This last week has been awful, truly awful. I've been barely sleeping. I was crazy sick a couple days ago. All stress, too. Like, it's not like I'm legitimately ill. It's just been a really rough week. A lot of stuff going on. But, you know, dabbled with the patch a little bit. It's good content. The visuals on the stuff for the Halloween patch are all really great. The Mercy skin is awesome. Honestly, I think my biggest complaint, if I have a complaint, and it's very minor, is just it feels like I wish I knew when these events were coming so I could try to prestige before them, right? Because it's so much easier to get those first few loot boxes as you're a lower level.
You didn't anticipate a few weeks in advance that there'd be a Halloween thing?
I did not, sir.
It's almost like we talked about that on the podcast, about potentially having checked out.
No, it's awesome content, but it does make me feel like when I log in, my biggest motivator to play is I want to unlock more of this stuff. And I'm to this point exclusively just paying for the game itself. I haven't paid any money for loot boxes. I'm trying to keep it that way. And it's tough. It's
free to play in the only game that matters, by the way.
Free to play in the only game with an upfront cost. So,
you know, all right. Fair enough. I'll concede that point, but it baffles me that I know you spend some money in Hearthstone. I know you.
Yeah,
do.
I'm like $500-$600 deep in Hearthstone.
Oh my gosh.
That is one of those kind of
rest in pieces
moments, because that's that's your flight there and back to BlizzCon twice.
Not
next
anymore,
2 years. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
It's a whole other story. Come on. We got news.
So we got news. Is it okay if I break it down for a second? I need to.
Yeah, you have some.
I need to talk.
News.
Okay. So yes. I'm going to the solo cam here. That's This is big news. Solo cam.
You mean to play the sappy music from the YouTube video?
There you go.
Yeah, totally. All right. So just kidding. We're not doing that. I'm joking. In the arms of the angels. What is that? Sarah McLachlan song? She's Canadian, right?
Yes, she is.
Oh, yeah. Canadian pride. There we go. So, all right. Sorry, this is going way off track. If you're listening and want to get to Overwatch, fast forward 4 minutes. 4 minutes. I've had a major life change. A major one. Basically, 8 days ago, I was given a choice to keep working at the company I was working for or stop podcasting. And I made a really difficult choice. And I decided that I'm going to pursue podcasting and live streaming, at least until I graduate, completely full time. I am streaming 35 hours a week, doing two podcasts, and then all the other stuff we're doing with other shows that I'm guesting on and helping out with. So I don't want to go too much into detail there, but if you want to know more about what's going on, head over to kickedtripod.com, and I've got a blog post up there talking about what happened, where I'm going forward, and all that stuff. Now, the good news is we won't be missing weeks of the payload anymore unless I'm traveling, so that's great. I think our podcasts are going to look and sound as good as ever, and I think that the content is going to be as great as ever. So I hope you're really excited about that. But in order to make it happen, it does all revolve around your guys' support of the show or the streams or things individually there. So if you do like the show and don't want me to have to go back to full-time job, missing weeks and doing all that stuff, consider heading over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast. Or kicktripod.com. You can find out all the different ways that you can support. But if you like this show specifically, you should give to this show. But that's it. That's my thing. Guys, I'm doing this full time. I'm in the, that's the stuff. It's really scary. Kevin, just like you, I have slept a combination of about 20 to 25 hours over the last 8 days. So
I don't want to belabor this because people are running out of their 4 minutes, but I will say I did this. I went through this when I quit my job 2 years ago to just go full time into esports and try to make this happen. And it's the best choice I ever made in my whole life. So I wish you all sorts of luck, man. And we're here to help.
Yeah.
You're braver than me. That's all I got to say.
I mean, I probably would not have made the choice on my own volition. Like it mm-hmm. definitely took a huge push and a big external factor, but I'm going to take it as a sign. We're going to continue doing this moving forward. And I think we're gonna make the best content we've made yet. So end of 2016 into 2017 is going to be amazing. Cheers. Cheers.
Cheers.
Let's go to news.
This week in Overwatch.
So before we get started with the show, we do want to thank our MVPs, Adam B, Tyler H, J.A., Coral, and Tommy H. Are you kidding me? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? 5 of you? You're amazing. Thank you so much for your incredible, amazing, stupendous support of this show. If you do like the show, want to support it, head on over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast. Find out how you can get involved. Now that I'm, you know, doing this full time going forward, we're going to be planning some all out game nights, including tonight. So I believe after the show tonight, we're going to be playing some Overwatch. Maybe Rosh is not. Rosh might not be.
No, okay. I'm just kidding. Too I'm cool totally for school. Down. No, I'm totally down. To
she'll be.
It.
She'll
it's
be
fine.
On her. Oh my god.
So I'm okay with being carried if my rank goes up.
But we
oh,
will.
Whoa, we're playing. Oh,
no, I'm just kidding.
I'm going to get on my Smurf for that. It's okay. I'll get on my Smurf. It's fine.
What we will likely do.
Rosh, I have to take a shower move. It's going to be good.
Yep. Oh, I got a phone call. I got to change my flight.
Oh, what's that? Okay.
But what we will likely do is we've got 4 of us, obviously, but we'll probably pull in 2 people and patrons are going to get, you know, first pick. So if you want to play with us after the show and you're a patron, let me know. Just send me a little whisper here. First come, first serve. Probably, maybe, depends on how many people, you know, say that. But if you're like, hey, I want to be a part of that, stay tuned on the show. We'll let you know when those game nights are coming up. This one was kind of spur of the moment. There was no way to prepare anyone for it. But going forward, we should have more and it should be an awesome time. Patreon.com/payloadpodcast. Woo! All right. Our 15 minutes is up for all the housekeeping stuff. I promise it won't be that long going forward. But 2 weeks ago, the Halloween event went live. It started on October 12th, not even 2 weeks ago, 1 week and 1 day ago. So more than 1 week ago, the Halloween event went live. And this is kind of a big deal, but I'm sure from every other podcast that everyone listens to, like they've already kind of heard what's going on, so we won't dwell on it too much, but it's going October 12th through November 1st, so we've got about 10, 11 days left before this, we put a wrap on this one. So let's talk about this for a moment. So first and foremost, over 100 new cosmetic items. That's not first and foremost. I'm saving the best for last. So here's something really interesting. So we talked about on episode 42, we talked about how the Overwatch team is going to monetize adventures. Well, not adventures, but these special events and cosmetic items and Overwatch as a whole going forward. And we all kind of concluded that it would be purely for money. Rosh, can I help you?
No, I'm sorry.
Can I?
Are
you passing notes? Are you guys passing notes in
class?
They
are passing notes, yes.
Unbelievable.
Oh, you called me out. I'm sorry. Okay.
No, I'm sorry. Okay. Is there something you'd like to tell
about,
the class?
No, I was thinking about the conversation that we were having last 2 weeks ago, and Kevin wasn't listening to us talk about the Halloween event coming up. So I was just trying to remember that.
Wow.
Yeah. I got called out, so I had to call someone else out. It's like a total middle school thing to do.
Oh, very good. Very good. Anyway,
I didn't start it.
I'm more than willing. Too
much started it.
I'm willing, more than willing to admit I was wrong about
cosmetics
never being purchasable. They went ahead and did that, and I like it.
Kevin, okay, I need you to say it. I need you to say I was wrong. I need to hear it.
John, you were wrong. Yes.
Kevin. Kevin.
Yes, I was also wrong. You were correct. Yes.
There it is. All right,
and you know what? And honestly, it's a better system for sure than the Summer Games. If anything, honestly, my sincere hope is that they strongly consider a similar model if they bring back the Summer Games theme next year or the next go round whenever it comes up again.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense for them to do it this one time and then just completely change the way they do it next time.
I mean, I would tend to agree, but technically that's what they did this time, right? They had a model and they switched. And the new model is definitely better. And I'm really hoping that going forward, this is sort of the overall architecture for cosmetics in the game as they add them. Is just everything will always be purchasable for currency, but maybe the costs are increased for limited run stuff.
So let's not beat around the bush here. Let's not jump around the Winston barrier. Let's just go right into it and talk about it. Yeah, that happened. So the cosmetic items are, Rosh, can I help you?
No, okay. I'm fine.
Great. All right. So anyways.
This is a great podcast. I'm having a lot of fun. It's good.
I can't tell if you're...
Oh, no, that was actually serious. This has been really fun so far, so I'm actually...
All right. Anyways, all in-game cosmetic items for the Halloween event are available to purchase for in-game currency, albeit three times the amount of in-game currency. So a legendary is normally 1,000 credits. It's now 3,000 credits for Rosh's Mercy skin. Epic is normally 250. It's now 750, and the other stuff is irrelevant. So that's kind of what it is. And I'm really curious, guys. This is really important here. And Lance K sent in an email. We're kind of going to answer it now. He goes, some people are actually upset about this. They're not totally loving this. They're just whiny complainers, right? They're just whiny complainers.
I can actually see, like, I want to say, but I can actually see it. I was just, it's funny that you brought this up because I was just talking about this on my stream yesterday.
You can actually see.
I can see why people would be upset. That's the thing, because they want something that symbolizes that they played during this time, during the Halloween event, and they played enough to get X amount of loot boxes to increase their RNG to get this skin. If you make it viable for everybody, I can see why people would feel like it's less important. On the same hand, those people kind of just need to suck it up. So I could see why they would complain, but I'm also for what Blizzard did with the Overwatch skins. I'm totally happy that they let me craft the Mercy skin for 3,000, because if I didn't get the Mercy skin, I would quit Overwatch. So I can understand both ways.
Why?
What?
I mean, okay, so I know that these people exist, but there are some people who think that this shouldn't be purchasable for in-game currency, and you understand why, just because the exclusivity factor of it? Is that,
well,
is that your argument?
I used to feel the same way. So I can understand why people would feel that way. That's all I'm saying, is that I can understand and I can relate to why
empathy.
People might
okay.
complain.
Got it. You got it.
Yeah. Okay.
Way to be diplomatic about that.
That
was very
fair. Yeah.
Kevin, is Rosh not wrong?
You know, okay, so I like that they went to purchasable. I think that was a big flaw with Summer Games. I think that this is a decent compromise. This is an okay way for them to arrive at a way that people don't feel bad, right? Like, to Raj's point, I don't think anybody was planning on outright quitting the game over not getting a cosmetic item. Raj is making a face, but in general, the average person was probably not planning on straight up quitting the game over the presence or absence of a particular cosmetic item. That's my honest opinion. But I do also think that the acquisition model was made fairly apparent early on. You were going to earn these credits by virtue of getting duplicate items. And when you couldn't spend them on things, that felt really awkward. It felt like you now couldn't actually take advantage of the currency you built up. And I know this is a stretch because I don't think this applies to very many players, but for sake of argument, if you have a complete collection, right, if you finish all of the core cosmetics in the game and all you need is the seasonal items or the stuff that's being newly introduced, and all of the newly introduced stuff is cash only, then any duplicates that you do receive as you unlock loot boxes, no longer, there's no impetus for you to want loot boxes. And that's a really negative thing for the game, right? It's a really negative thing for the way that Blizzard wants you to perceive the reward structure of the game. So, I mean, the expense ratio, is it too high, too low? Could they have done something different? Maybe. I would have loved to have seen them maybe just put the premium on the legendary items or something. But honestly, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, because again, as we've said before, these are strictly cosmetic appearance items. I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty happy with this outcome. I don't think they could have done anything that would have made everyone happy, shy of just being like, you can have all the skins for free. So in terms of a monetized inclusion, this feels good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good compromise, I think. And I have seen people complain, oh my gosh, three times the amount, but it's a limited time event and they have to somehow incentivize buying the boxes for people. And I think it's a good compromise. I think we agree across the board pretty much here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see a way in which this is definitely better than Summer Games. Now, is it the best implementation of it? Time will tell, right? Clearly, it either means that Blizzard wasn't totally happy with the Summer Games and how it ended up, you know, supporting the game going forward, or they're so happy with it that they like, whoa, we're a business. We don't need that much money, guys. Let's give some of that back. Just kidding. That probably didn't happen. But there's definitely an aspect of, you know, that Blizzard is at least willing to keep trying and iterating on this because they don't think that they have the formula right yet. Or maybe we will see different events with different types of monetization policies going forward. That seems a little confusing to me, right? Because it'd be kind of like, well, in Hearthstone, if you buy this adventure in you know, the winter season, you know, you pay for it with in-game gold or currency or money. In the spring season, you only can play for it. And like that can get kind of, oh, spring season, time to save up my gold. And that inconsistency, I don't think will work well for them in the long time. I think the ultimate goal is to get to a place where it's like, boom, this is the way that we like to monetize and make available our special events. And then I think they're just going to try to keep that going further with small tweaks going forward. Probably the more cosmetic items that you have, maybe it costs, you know, less. You know, if there's 10 legendaries, you're not going to maybe, or like whatever, two times as many legendaries as there are with the Halloween one. Maybe they're like, all right, 2,000 this time because they're not as rare. Or on the flip side, if there's five, maybe they cost a little bit more because you have less items to spend currency on. But I think I really do think that they definitely took a big stride in the right direction. But we'll see if this is the final form or if it continues to change over time. Any last thoughts on this one?
No.
Not really. I think you hit all the big nails on the head, right? Like, they probably are still going to iterate, but what they did here feels like a pretty strong improvement. It wasn't quite as tone deaf as the implementation for Summer Games. So I think we have to accept that this is an improvement. And if they decide to make it better in the future again, great. But if not, this is better than it was. And there's really nothing negative to say about that.
Right. And Jeff Kaplan even did say when they announced it, we're still learning. So good on him. Good on him being nice and vulnerable. That was nice. Okay, so we did have a patch a little while ago. We're going to go through this really quick, and then we'll move on. So obviously we didn't even talk about the big thing. PvE is now a thing in Overwatch. So we've got the adventure, Junkenstein's Revenge. And this is pretty neat. We might have to do one of these after the show, us four. I think that might be pretty sweet. And then Rosh won't pull us up into like diamond platinum people. So that'll also be nice. So
yeah, that works.
Rosh, tell us about Junkenstein's Revenge, if you could.
Oh, no, I can't. I've been on vacation. I haven't played.
All right, fine. Kevin, tell us about Junkenstein's Revenge.
Oh, it's going to be one of those kinds of days. Oh, yes. Right. So Junkenstein's Revenge is the brawl mode for Overwatch during the Halloween event. And it's a pretty nice change up from what the brawls have been in the past. I would say the seasonal brawls to this point have been far and away the strongest brawls that Overwatch has introduced. So unlike Lucio Ball, which was a multiplayer thing, Junkenstein's Revenge is actually like a PvE you play against the AI event. You are trying to fend off Dr. Jameson Junkenstein, and it's cool. It's kind of like, to me, it feels a lot like a Left 4 Dead zombie type event. I know they're kind of riffing on that Left 4 Dead Call of Duty-esque feel, but you're basically defending against oncoming waves of computer-controlled enemies, and it's actually a lot of fun. I don't think it's something that would be a good like core feature in Overwatch, but as a brawl, it's been spectacular. And it definitely, I think, helps with one of the weaknesses of Overwatch and of some of Blizzard's titles in general of late, which is they've all been basically exclusively multiplayer titles, right? Hearthstone has that problem. Heroes of the Storm has that problem. And when it launched, Overwatch had that problem as well. There's no way to play these games unless you're playing in a multiplayer, quasi-competitive multiplayer environment. So this felt really good and was a nice way to be able to play with my friends who maybe I'm, you know, much better or worse than, like, why Rosh won't play with us.
I never said I wouldn't play with you guys. I never said I wouldn't play with you guys.
It's been fun. I've played it a couple times, and I think it really shows that there's a potential future for an expanded version of this in the next couple months or years of Overwatch, and it's been really fun. I haven't been able to complete it on the hardest difficulty yet, but I think one of the funniest things is because of how everything is kind of set up with the intros of the enemies there, is people started figuring out you could get player characters in there, and there have been some really funny ones. I don't know if anyone has seen those, but I think Kotaku put up a like collection of them. It's been really funny. Like moving Anna in front of the camera as it zooms in on Mercy or something like that. It's been really fun.
Yeah, it's definitely amazing. We're not going to go about this on this too much because, well, this is about a week old. But now you know, we talked about it. You know how we feel about it. We need to talk a little bit about some of the big news that's like fresh, like today fresh. We like to keep it fresh here on the payload. And we've got such things. So Jeff Kaplan did post a statement, Jeff Goodman. Was it Jeff Goodman or Jeff Kaplan? One of the Jeffs Goodman. From the Overwatch team. Yeah, Goodman posted that they're going to be making some pretty significant changes on the PTR, and they're going to approach the PTR different than they normally have, and to expect pretty major changes, but at the same time, also expect that many of them won't stick. It's just something that they are trying out going forward. So, you know, maybe we'll see that type of things. Hello. Rosh, that face. Anyways, Jimmy, please, no barking. Sorry, that wasn't, we'll edit that out later.
We'll let it slide.
We'll get that. Just writing down the time stamp there and boom. Anyways, so, oh my God. Yeah, I bet you guys love being here for the live show. So, all right. Anyways, so we've got some pretty significant changes going forward. I'll hit the big ones and we'll kind of go down the list. The first things first, ultimate cost has been increased 25% across the board. So every character's ultimate has been increased by 25%. And damage
makes
them
feel a little more meaningful, I feel like. Yeah. Sorry, I know if you want me to jump in and comment.
Well, let's jump
in. Go along.
What are the impacts of this one, guys? What are the big takeaways here?
I guess now you got nothing.
I was going to say now Jimmy says nothing.
Wow.
Nobody wants to take turns. All right, look. So the ultimate charge thing has been something that has kind of come and gone. They've tweaked it back and forth a few ways. You'll recall the patch earlier this year where they made the change so that self-healing effects help to generate ultimates, and that started to give back a little bit of the kind of smooth feel of how certain ults charged. On the whole, I think for most players, it feels like ultimates are up too often. It feels like you have access to your ultimate for every single meaningful engagement during every game. And you spend so little time playing without them that really the only time where you're using your character's base kit and not addressing the prospect of dealing with a character's ultimate is right at the start of the game. So every game you start out and you play with your core kit and you're sort of positioning and jockeying and doing all these like tense maneuvers, trying to do what you can with your character's base kit, waiting until people can line up ults, waiting until people call out to use ults or watch for particular ults or that an ult has been used and isn't available. But there's just this very brief window where it feels like you don't actually contend with that constant issue. I, for one, think this would be a really positive change. I think, you know, for most characters, this is only going to mean you get like one less ult per game, right? You're going to go from having four to maybe having three. That's not an enormous change. It just makes, to Jimmy's point, it feel a little more meaningful. You have to now think about, do I use this ultimate or not? And I will emphasize this because I know we've brought this up on the show like 100 times and beaten it to death. It also makes character switching feel a little less bad. If you start with a character and it's not working for your comp, you don't stick to it because, well, I'm 60% of the way to this ult and I feel like I should use the ult and then switch. The less that people are married to ult usage and the more they feel like they can correctly make character swaps, I think the better for the game as a whole.
Okay,
yeah,
I agree.
Yep. I agree. I think it slows the game down enough to where, from a healer perspective, it comes into more who can get the headshots on the other team, not which Reaper gets the ult faster in 15 seconds. Because as it is right now, especially with the addition of Ana, ults are huge in the game. I feel like that shouldn't be how it is. Like, ults are good, and they're good for clutch situations, but it shouldn't revolve around which team has their ult faster the entire game, which is what it kind of seemed like before. Because ult build was so fast that it was just constantly building up, and every single team fight was about who had more ults. Now it's going to be a little more skill reliant, and I'm really excited to see that in tournament play, because you're going to see the really cool one-on-ones on the flanker sides, on the left and right side, because you don't have to worry about all the ults because the ult build is slower. So I like this change, especially because it's all across the board, so it doesn't really change any character strengths or weaknesses other than the actual how the actual game is played. So I'm excited for it. I'm looking forward to it. I hope they keep it.
I definitely agree with that. There is one thing. So I have one concern. On one side, yes, it makes those skirmishes and stuff. And I think that's what they're going for, is let's not make it meaningless skirmish to build up your ultimates, you know, let your Reaper and McCree get their poke damage through, you know, or Ana, you know, do that stuff so that they can get to their ultimate as quickly. One thing it might do, which I hope it does not, is it actually just slows down the game. I like the pace of Overwatch. I like the pace at which other teams are fighting. each other. So I like that, but I just wish that it wasn't every time there's a team fight, it's, you know, blowing off three or four alts to, you know, take out the other team. And hopefully it doesn't just mean that it now elongates that time between those team fights by 25%, because that is something. If the individual fights aren't meaningful enough, then that's what happens. And so I think that there's two sides to that that are really important.
Sure. But I mean, I think there's definitely an argument to be made that in terms of like the non-ultimate skirmishes or the importance of when we used to do like the segments on mechanics and stuff, we talked so much about the value of mobility, the value of verticality, all these things that are super fundamental to all shooters. And I feel like a lot of that stuff got de-emphasized slightly by the prevalence of ultimates, right? You spent your entire game setting up for the wombo combo with alts rather than actually utilizing some of the other things about your character that were really powerful. This makes the ability to reset and disengage from a fight more powerful. This makes the ability for you to use single ultimates rather than throwing away all of your team's alts in one big combination more valuable, right? Now, as a player, I have to think very carefully. If we use all of our ultimates, there's a very long window where we're vulnerable, where the other team has maybe some of theirs still available. So yep. Maybe it's actually correct now from a playstyle perspective to stagger them. Let's plan on using a Zarya ult and a Mei ult, but holding the other ones and just killing them with regular raw damage. And if they respond by using, you know, a Zenyatta ult and a Reinhardt ult to try to counter us, fine. We've traded two for two. But it's no longer the type of game where you feel like the correct play most of the time is to trade all of your ults away because they recharge so quickly that who cares? You'll have them again by the time you have a 6-on-6 again.
Yeah, what's really cool is that it kind of brings in this new vantage point to games of trying to bait out ults, because if you bait out a Mei ult, like you're going to attack the payload and they defensively ult against that, that is a huge win strategically in your book, and you are going to take full advantage of that. So I am super excited, to say the least, to see this implemented.
In a way, it
seems good.
Yeah, it's funny that like this list is supposed to be a bunch of really aggressive changes that they aren't sure whether or not will stick. And yet this one doesn't feel like it's really that aggressive. This feels like it's a good... I think this is a good safe change that they're testing because they want to see it changed. Maybe the exact number shifts, maybe it's 20% instead of 25, but it doesn't feel like this is a game breaking thing that they're experimenting with. It feels like a good core thematic change that makes the game feel better. My guess would be at this point that maybe these changes don't land before BlizzCon. I would be really surprised if these went live before people played the World Cup. Would feel really awkward. But,
yeah, it's too close.
Yeah, I mean, but it's nice to have them.
Is it that competitive though? We've seen the World Cup, right?
I really think so.
That's a ton to relearn, I think, for players to reestablish the meta in a week's time. Like, that's the exact sort of stuff that gets people yelled at other game developers by screwing up the timing of their major esports tournaments.
Yeah, I was going to say, even if it doesn't affect it, Blizzard, because it's not that competitive, to say the least, it's going to tilt the players. The players themselves won't be happy, and that's a big part of it.
I would be really astonished if this went live.
I would be too, but I honestly just think it's because everyone's going to be watching BlizzCon, and they want people to be watching and hanging out with BlizzCon. If you're making major changes to your games during BlizzCon or right around BlizzCon, like you're taking away from what, you know, you kind of care about. But honestly, if Team Canada, with only three competitive players, maybe four competitive players, don't get all the same changes, like, this is a big popularity contest, right? So I don't know. I don't know if I they won't change it before BlizzCon because of that. I agree that they won't change it before BlizzCon. I just don't know if that's going to be their reasoning. Not that it matters or that we'd ever know.
Let's put it this way. It would establish a bad precedent. So even if it doesn't matter this year, it would set a precedent that would scare players and teams. And that's the kind of thing that organizationally in esports, people are very, very strongly opposed to. So even if it doesn't matter this year, even if they wouldn't do it next year, it's the kind of thing where they can make it very clear to all of the competitive organizations involved in Overwatch that no, we're never going to try and drop a major patch 2 weeks out from our world championship or a major premier tournament. Like that's a good safe thing to do. And they care very deeply about trying to cultivate that type of relationship with their players and their teams. There's no way that they push this through live right now.
Okay. I mean, I disagree. Like I just straight up disagree because they aren't there. The idea is to showcase Overwatch as a game and they want to showcase that in the best light possible. Now, yes, would major changes potentially, you know, be, you know, negatively affect that? At the same time, we're not going to have a World Cup next year. You know, it's not going to be Team Canada versus Team USA versus all these things here next year. So they've also set the precedent that the first year after a game releases is kind of a popularity contest, not this uber competitive. Let's talk about, or let's play Overwatch and have leagues and these incredible players and all that stuff. So I get where you're coming from. I don't necessarily think that it matters that much.
Sure. I mean, I think to your point, what will end up happening is they want that type of attention focused on whatever's being released and announced for Overwatch, right? If they're doing an expansion or new heroes or new maps, that's where they want the attention. They want people paying attention to that. They want people paying attention to the panels about that. They want people paying attention to the news releases coming from the press people who are at BlizzCon. They're going to focus on that. So having a newer or older version of like a PTR or non-PTR version of Overwatch playable at BlizzCon fundamentally isn't a big PR issue, but from an esports perspective, it would be. So I think that the easiest way to sort of split the difference is hold the PTR patch off on the basis that it's, right, you know, aggressive testing changes or whatever.
Right.
Keep people focused on the new content. And then when we get to the other side of BlizzCon, it all kind of coalesces at once.
Boom. There's something we agree on. So let's talk about these changes here because we've got quite a few. But before we do, I actually got a whisper. The experience, we've got some experience changes, and this is actually kind of a big deal. So basically the amount of experience needed to reach each level between 1 and 13 remains unchanged. On the PTR, the amount of experience needed to reach 14 to 100 has been slightly reduced, and the amount of experience needed to reach each level after 100 is now 20K XP. So, and will no longer reset with each promotion.
So that stacking trying to set up your doesn't XP, matter. The procedure, yeah, won't do that anymore.
That's probably a healthy change, actually. Mm-hmm. It sounds like is that a global reduction in total experience needed from 1 to 100? I can't do that math that fast.
I think so. I'm pretty sure it is.
Well, from 20, it used to be 22K, right? Was it 22 or 23?
After 25, I think.
Yeah, it was at
22K.
So the early levels are lower.
23, I believe, was the level. So let's just say, hypothetically, 78 times, you know, 2,000. So you're looking at 156,000 is how much experience you're removing. You're removing 156,000 between 23 and 100.
Right, and adding some portion of that back between 1 and 23. So it's probably a net gain. It's just it smooths it out and makes it so people aren't trying to game the system and hold off on a prestige until new content is announced or something. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, in the end, it's interesting, right? It's something that has changed. Worth noting. But let's talk about some meaningful pieces here. So, Rosh, what do we have going on with D.Va?
With D.Va, she now has 100 plus mech health. So now her mech itself, instead of the shields, is 100 plus greater. And her armor, or I'm sorry, that's her base health, right? When you're in the shield, technically you have 400 armor, and then the mech has a base health of 100. That's now been increased to 200. So now, as a D.Va in the suit, you have 600 health, which is kind of crazy. Have you seen a picture of it? It looks like a daunting number when you look at it. It's pretty cool. And then also on top of that, when you are now shooting at someone, they have increased your movement speed by 25%. And I've played D.Va a couple of times. She's not really my cup of tea, but that movement slow while she was shooting was pretty slow. So it'll be interesting to see how much of a difference that makes. She was, when they originally buffed her ult to go off after 3 seconds and they did the whole rework last time, she saw a little bit of play, but then it kind of died out and you stopped seeing her as much. I think this will bring her up a little more and you'll definitely see a lot more. Just how much will be interesting. So I'm excited to see where this goes.
I feel like of all the changes in the PTR, this is the one that's going to get, I think, changed. Most likely to get changed. 100 health is a huge amount. I mean, we saw how much they tooled around with Zenyatta's health and how much that changed his kind of pick rate and how that made him from being able to be one shot to not being so able to be a headshot there and killed off, or body shot. It was body shots even. But yeah, they fixed that and made him a little bit better, and then they brought him down a little bit again. So I feel like this is going to get changed. 100 health is a ton of health in this game, and that movement speed while firing is going to make her much scarier when she is starting down that fire.
I like the movement change. I really do. I think if one of those stick, I think that's the one that sticks. Basically, it's just she's so slow. I think that's a nice change. But yeah, you're right. 100 health is a lot. It is a lot of health, especially when you can block. A good D.Va can block so much damage as it is. It's pretty interesting. What about Soldier 76, Kev?
Soldier, I think this is probably the most experimental of the changes on this list, in my opinion. They're looking at increasing his individual bullet damage from 17 to 20, which is a pretty substantial increase, but it to compensate increasing maximum bullet spread from a radius of 2.2 to a radius of 2.4. So what you would see is basically much higher damage on controlled fire, but a slight reduction in hit scan effectiveness if you're not using smaller bursts of fire. And this is probably a good compromise in terms of they've messed a lot with fire spread and all that calculations that go into that to try to get rid of people using like mouse macros to game 76 and try to keep his burst from being too well spread. I think this is a nice change where you reward people who manually are controlling for spread well and using those 2 and 3 round bursts because they're going to get to do a lot more damage. But at the same time, you're now hopefully not giving people who don't babysit their rate of fire a little bit more of a weakness to compensate. Overall, it's probably a net zero for most soldier players, but it increases the skill ceiling. And I think that's a really smart change. But it will make soldier way scarier. This is going to make a soldier that knows how to use burst fire to like take out long and medium distance opponents super scary against like a Pharah or a Mercy. It's a big deal. It's a big change.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I was going to bring up another point, but that's actually a really good point that I didn't even think about, is that the Pharah Mercy combo was just kind of starting to edge its way back into the competitive scene. And this buff to Soldier, while it's a good buff, I think that they might have to toy around something with Pharah or Mercy. I know, an unbiased opinion, but as of right now, it's just on such a delicate balance, that Pharah Mercy combo, and it's a good combo, and it hasn't seen play in a while, that adding Soldier might throw that off a little bit. So we are unfortunately going to see less Mercy play in ranked, so I'll have to figure something out. But in terms of the good changes to Soldier, this game, or the competitive Overwatch as it is right now, is not poke heavy at all. It's either you kill someone or you're feeding the other team ult, and you don't want to do that. And that's exactly what Soldier's doing pre-changes on this PTR, is that Soldier doesn't really have a lot of bursts. You're just kind of slowly whittling their health down, and that's why a lot of people don't run Soldier. They'd rather run a McCree, they'd rather run a Reaper that can 100 to zero someone, unlike Soldier does, so that the other team doesn't get to just heal said target up and then get their ult. So I think that that'll help that poke. I think poke damage will come a little more into it, so it'll kind of change everything. I think it's a good change. I'm just kind of worried about the Pharah Mercy combo.
The thing to bear in mind, right, because a lot of people will miss this, is that in addition to the fact that this is just a straight up, like, almost 20% damage buff to soldiers straight up, at least on his primary fire, it's also going to affect scaling, right? So all the multipliers that go into things like headshots now are way, way more effective as well, because the additional damage is also being multiplied. So the extra damage on the high end in competitive, where people's aim is really, really good, like, I don't know exactly what the headshot count would be for every character off the top of my head, but this is going to reduce it by a serious margin. It's going to be 1 to 2 less per character, depending on their health values. Like, that's a big change, especially for a character that has really good mobility, self-healing, can engage and disengage so efficiently. Like, that's a massive quality of life improvement for soldier, and would hopefully actually make him feel like a choice, right? Right now, you don't feel like you have a choice between soldier and McCree unless you're specifically trying to counter comp somebody. You just take the McCree. It's more burst damage. Like, it's hard to argue against that.
Right.
Well, yeah, there's nothing a McCree can't do that a soldier would be able to.
Right. Well, in soldier, kind of it's trying to live between McCree and Reaper in a lot of ways, right? For like the total distance. And
The drop off distance is right down the middle there.
Right. And so it's been trying to, but the problem was that it wasn't doing enough damage in that middle area. So you saw Reaper or you saw McCree. You didn't really see soldier. And so hopefully now again, they're affecting the range a little bit. They're reeling it in by making the spread more, but they're giving you more damage. Hopefully that's enough to where when you need that medium damage, I'm trying to think the type of maps that you really need that kind of medium damage might be like maybe control type stuff. You might need a little bit more. Anyways, when you need damage, you might, the goal I feel like is to make soldier viable, and I think this is their first pass at doing it. Jimmy.
Yep.
Hey, Jimmy, what do we got going on with grandma?
Grandma getting some serious nerfs here as Anna is, the boost is no longer going to increase movement speed. So that kind of cuts a couple of those combos off at the knees, I feel like, especially specifically the Reinhardt Ana combo is so strong right now. This doesn't let Reinhardt be able to close the gap as easily. So it'd be interesting to see what it does to that, and if Ana players are going to have to prioritize different targets going forward with this. I mean, I think this is the biggest nerf of the PTR changes. It surprises me a little bit that it's just a flat out get rid of the movement speed nerf and not something like trying to tune the numbers. But I mean, that's more akin to what the developers were saying. They were like, oh, we're going to be a little bit more liberal about our changes on the PTR. So don't worry, these are not going to be final, et cetera. But this one's huge, I feel like. And I correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a big nerf to Ana.
Huge.
The nerf is substantial. I also think this is a very smart change, honestly. It gets rid of a lot of the really gimmicky kind of, I don't want to use like really pejorative terms, but it gets rid of a lot of the really ugly duos and specific comp tricks people were trying to pull off using the speed and not the other effects of Nana Boost, right? This is something that we've seen Blizzard take a real hard line on, is movement speed increasing effects. And every time there's been a serious emphasis on them, Blizzard comes back through and says, no, we got to deal with that. I was honestly shocked at how powerful this ult was when it came in. And
I think anybody expected it to be that powerful.
Not at all. I mean, on first pass, reading about the healing sniper, people were like, this is not going to see play at all.
Well, and the crappy mobility, right? Too, right? So it's like,
right,
why would
zero
I play
mobility.
This?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, they had to make her ult really attractive to make her playable. The problem is that we've reached a point where there's so few viable counters to her ult, in part because it's so easy to avoid enemy damage with the speed boost. There's probably an argument to be made here that this is a little bit unnecessary if the other ultimate changes go through. Like, if you're not getting as many of them per game, it's maybe not as deleterious to the state of the game. But at the same time, I would rather see them take the movement speed out and rebalance Ana as necessary based on that. I think that's like healthier for the game as a whole.
Well,
so
go ahead.
I like the fact that they nerfed Ana, because Ana was seen on every single map possible, any kind of combination of DPS. I think she's way overpowered. Pros think she's way overpowered. Everybody thinks she's way overpowered. So I'm glad that they heard that and they're taking that into consideration. Do I think that they could have nerfed her in a different way? Yes. This will definitely cripple her, but I think that there were better ways to nerf her. If you look at Ana, for example, she doesn't have any fall-off damage for the healing if you're healing someone 100 yards away versus 25 yards away. There's no fall-off damage. So she could be on the other side of the map, and she's still going to heal you the exact same as if she's right next to you. Her grenade could use a little tweaking. There are different things. Maybe the damage immunity that Ana's ult gives you could have done a little tweaking versus flat-out removing the movement speed. To Blizzard's point, and like Jimmy said before, they did say that they would get a little crazy with changing stuff on the PTR because they're going to make the PTR last longer, so they really want to experiment. But I think that there were better ways to nerf Ana and to try and tweak her than this. Again, this will still cripple her, but I think that she will still see play, and I think that there were better ways they could have changed something.
Right. Well, and looking at the Overwatch hero tier list that Captain Planet does over at, Planet Overwatch, I believe is where that's at. You would see Lucio and Ana, their usage rates are all like 85% plus on all four types of game types. Because that Beyblade combo was just so strong, whether you're putting it on a Reinhardt or a Reaper, it was such a strong combo, and it basically became necessary. And Kevin, to your point though, if the game becomes more meaningful around alts and less about alt stacking, I guess I would say, like, this may not be as necessary of a change as we might think. Maybe it movement speed is a great way to do it, but you know, I think Rosh has some great ideas for how to change that. So I think that about wraps it up for Ana. What do we got going on with May, Kev?
May is actually getting the double whammy on her ult. So in addition to the 25% across the board increase in ultimate cost, May's is going to be increased by an additional 15%. That's additive, not multiplicative. So or the total increase will be 40% up from where ultimate costs are right now in terms of rate of charge. And again, I mean, this feels like a pretty safe change to me. They're not changing its effectiveness. They're not changing how useful it is as a zoning tool. They're not changing the number of ways in which this can be a game deciding ult in a character whose kit fluctuates between being the most or least valuable thing in the game, depending on composition and map. Like, she's already in such a cool niche place that it just felt like Blizzard was too attractive, right? The ability, and that they needed to do something with it. So just upping the cost makes it so that, like, this is going to be the kind of ult where you're going to throw it down once or twice a game in a real game deciding fashion, as opposed to just constantly lobbing it out on top of the payload, trying to, you know, slow a push on Hollywood or something. Like, it's going to make the ult feel like it matters when you use it, which again just plays into the idea that the cost of an ultimate should reflect the idea that you're only going to get to swing the game with it maybe once or twice in a match, not just use it on cooldown like it's a regular part of your base kit that you use every 30 seconds instead of every 5.
I think Blizzard is just trying to the organization Blizzard is just trying to really slow down the game so that it is just all of these changes seem to be more built towards taking ults as much out of the game while still leaving them there as an appeasing thing to work towards and get to, and it can still change a fight. Just stepping away from it actually being skill related and less ult build related. So you actually have to be good at the game, not just good at building your ult as fast as you can and then using that and turning the whole game. So I like this change. I don't know how I feel about 40%. It might be a little much. We'll have to see. I'm not sure. Actually, no, because all of the characters are getting a 25 increase. So it's basically just a 15. So I like it. I'll stand by it. I think May will still be played. I think it's a good change.
Fair enough. Well, Rosh, how do you feel about what's going on with Lucio?
Lucio is his amp it up healing is now decreased by 10%. And I think that they did this because they tried nerfing Lucio a little bit so that he wasn't seeing so much competitive play. Because there was a time where Lucio, just like Ana, was played every single match. They wanted to kind of go away from that and move towards other supports coming into the meta. And so they tried decreasing his speed boost, and that didn't really seem to work as well as they wanted it to. So I think the next step is them decreasing the healing so that some other heroes as support can take a step into that spotlight and play with him. So I don't think, I know you have the Overwatch stat sheet to show how many heroes were played, what percentage of games, and you still said it was like 80%. I think it was.
Right. It was high. It was the most played hero last week in competitive.
I don't think that Blizzard is appeased with how much Lucio is still being played. So I think that's why I like the change. I think it'll give other supports, Mercy, some time to shine in competitive, and I'm excited for this.
The cough is supposed to cover the Mercy, Rosh.
I just wanted to seem like I, you know, wasn't being biased, but then I had to make sure that everybody knew that I was.
Well, I'm biased because I like to play Lucio a lot, and I'm bummed about this change. But I mean, it's probably needed at this point. Like everyone was saying, the level of play that Lucio is seeing across the board is really high still. So they got to do something. We'll have to see if this is enough, though. I still think is healing the reasons you pick him are obviously the healing, but as well the speed boost. And you can go back 20 episodes or whatever when we had a talk about movement in Overwatch and how important that is. So I don't think this will change him too much, but we'll have to see.
Sure. Well, let's talk about Zarya here for a second then. So Zarya has also been being played a bunch at the competitive level. So Lucio, Ana, and Zarya are the top three most played competitive characters, at least last week. So we've got a change coming for Zarya. And what that is that her power gained from her barriers, both on herself and her allies, has been decreased by 20%. So it takes more to get up to those 70, 80, 90, 100 increased power. It doesn't actually decrease the total cap. So 100 is still that amount of damage. As it always was. It's just harder to get there. Exactly. Yeah. So that's what
I
we've
think
got.
This is actually my favorite nerf.
Okay.
Of the entire thing. Because Zarya's insane. Zarya's nutty. She's the top three most played character for a reason. And she has been for a while. It took teams a little while to figure out how strong she was and how to play her, but they have fully figured out how to utilize her. And the way I would have nerfed Zarya is exactly how they nerfed it on the PTR. So I am so thrilled because when she's fully charged, she's unstoppable. It is scary how insane a fully charged Zarya is. And you shouldn't, and that's not even with her ult. That's just, she can, it doesn't matter if her ult's charged or not. She could be at 0% and fully charged and she's just as scary. And I think that's too much. You shouldn't have a character that powerful. So yeah, decreasing how she gets her power increase from all of her barriers, which she uses quite a lot, is the perfect change. And I'm so glad that they did that. We'll see if it's enough. We'll see if it's too much, but that's another question. I think they figured out the way to nerf Zarya though. So that makes me happy.
Good.
Yeah. I want to jump in and say that I actually was going to raise this when Jimmy made the point earlier about the Ana nerf being potentially the most significant. This is the most significant nerf in this list by a huge margin because it's two out of Zarya's core abilities, right? This is literally the extent of her kit other than I'm a charging my laser. Like, this is it. And both of them are getting hit. And this is going to be like, Zarya is already, like, she's very powerful, don't get me wrong, but she's already a bit of a niche pick, right? You want her because she's got a very powerful ult that's up quite frequently, because she's got a lot of damage and can do a lot to sort of suppress in, like, close quarters engagements. But fundamentally, there's so many other characters that can take her place if she's not charged and if she's not throwing down these big ults. between the change to alt charge timings and this change to barrier, I don't think this kills Zarya by any stretch, but I think it vastly, vastly lowers the skill floor on Zarya, because you can't just get to full charge and wade through your opponents anymore. You're going to have to play a little bit less aggressively. You're going to have to think about the timing on these abilities. The only thing that would have been worse would have been if they had changed the timing on the cooldown, right? So instead of it being the current cooldown timings, if they'd made each of them like a second and a half longer or something, it would have increased.
Which I'm glad they didn't do.
No, that would have been awful. But it would have had kind of a similar effect, where it increases the window of vulnerability. Correct. It reduces her raw ability to charge. They're doing it this way, which I think makes it easier for her to stay kind of in the mix as a tank, which matters. But it's a huge change. And I'm gonna guess that this will be one of the last times for the foreseeable future that you're going to see a ton of competitive Zarya, because you're just never going to be as effective as you were. And the combo potential with the changes to ult already makes it so that you're kind of on the fence about whether or not you want her in the first place.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, that is. That is a truth fact. Okay. One more change, Kev. We'll let you take this one. Take us home. Bring us home.
All right. So last but certainly not the least, our good friend, Mr. Torbjorn. Torbjorn now on the PTR is going to automatically generate scrap over time, which is an enormous, enormous change. The amount of scrap collected from fallen enemies, however, is going to be decreased by 40% to compensate. So instead of 25 per enemy, it's 15. Swing speed has been increased on the Forge Hammer for turrets, but its damage output, if you use it in melee, has been decreased by 27%. Kind of an arbitrary value there, but on the whole, I actually think these are clever changes. I think they sort of cement Torbjorn's role as, like, not a support character, because that's not the way to phrase it, but like the type of character where you're going to have something to offer in terms of utility. He's like a specialist, right? He's the kind of character that brings some damage, brings some ability to zone control with the turret. The turrets are going to feel a little more stable because you can forge them faster, and you're going to be able to give out armor packs more consistently. It's in a way, it's kind of the same logic that we were just discussing about the impactfulness of ults and why having them charge slower matters, but in the inverse. It's really nice to see Torbjorn feel like he has merit and has value in the earlier parts of the game before he's had a chance to get a really high level turret built up, before he's had a chance to get a bunch of scrap to be able to give out the armor packs, right? Like, this makes him so that he's efficient throughout the game at a like more consistent rate, rather than being really kind of spiky. There's periods where he's super valuable and then he goes away again. I don't know that it makes him a great character on the whole. He's certainly not going to see competitive play because it's just too easy to zone him and control him, but it makes him feel like he's got a role again that isn't just start with him on defense when you're, you know, staring down over that first entrance on like Dorado and then drop him like a rock as soon as you start moving. It gives him a bit of a niche again, and I think it's great. Like, I think this will actually encourage people to think about using him for that sort of specialist utility role where you do have consistent access to armor even if you're not getting a bunch of takedowns.
I think the Forge Hammer upgrade is really going to help him in setting up positions much faster, though, because that's going to increase the rate at which he gets it from rank 1 to rank 2 or whatever, however it's called, and get that turret up to the potential that you want it to have as quickly as possible. The scrap generation automatically over time, like Kevin said, it's going to really even out his kind of power spikes, and that's really, I think that's, or not power spikes, but more the way he's able to contribute to the team, because obviously the armor is so valuable from him. You see it come up all the time on the cards after games. It seems like that thing comes up way too often. But yeah, I think these are good changes. Will it be enough to make him competitive? No, but we'll see.
Yeah, I was going to say these are changes, but I don't, like, I still feel in the same position towards Torbjorn competitively than I did before. Like, a lot of people are praising these changes, and I think that's cool. Like, they're excited, but I don't know why. Maybe I thought I was weird because I was like, I don't see, like, a difference that much. But maybe I'm missing something? Or maybe I'm just strictly looking at it from a competitive point of view.
That's what it is, right? The difference is that this is not going to be the character that people are playing for the strictest of competitive matches, right? There's a reason that you very rarely see a ton of Bastion in competitive or a ton of Torbjorn, and it's all sorts of limitations around mobility, you know, toolkit flexibility, how you take advantage of positioning. None of those things work the same way in competitive that they do in, you know, the dumpster tier that the rest of us live in, where being in a fixed position is not as big a threat until you're into like a higher MMR. You'll see lots of people who just stand in position and snipe from one place or set up a Bastion and sit there with it. And Torbjorn, I mean, you probably wouldn't know this because you didn't play on consoles, but Torbjorn had to be massively nerfed on console.
Yeah, I remember
because
that.
The hitscan tracking was so good. He was the best character. Yeah. Like, people were running six Torbjorns and winning on console because it was that powerful. So they needed to find a way to give him some utility back, right? It always felt like he was just a turret or nothing. And when they changed his ult to the way it works now, it sort of doubled down on that, where like you have this enormous powerful window where you matter, and the rest of the time is just set up for that because you don't have the ability to give out the armor, you don't have meaningful damage. Like, it's nice to see him feel like he has a purpose in a team comp, and it's not a, you know, screw you guys, I'm doing what I want pick when somebody takes him. He does now give something back to the rest of his team.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yep. I have one question about this, and we need to move on and wrap up here. But is Blizzard going to try to balance these heroes well enough to make it into competitive, either meaningfully high competitive ranks or even actual high level tournament play? Or do you think it's just kind of done?
No, I think they're okay with not having every single character be a top level viable.
Impossible. In the history of games with multiple characters, it's never been done. There's never been a single game where every character is actually equally viable at the high level. And even if they were, there would still be community perception. There would still be a meta, right? A meta that revolves around movement, or a meta that revolves around
characters
that can fly. Like, there's like, never going to be a way for that to work.
But so, like heroes, here's the Storm as an example. You'll see heroes come in and out of the meta there all the time. These are heroes that I don't ever see getting into the meta in any meaningful way, just because of their mobility issues.
Yeah,
and it's not even mobility issues is one thing, but if they're, like you guys have both said, they're always, it's never been done in a game where 100% of the characters that you can use will be a part of the meta, will be playable competitively on the same terms as other characters. They're always going to be the lesser characters that no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to get them in without taking another character out. And I think that Blizzard knows this, and the characters that they're kind of, you know, putting lower on the totem pole are characters like Torb, where the design is to be a turret player. I mean, how many play of the games did you used to see when Torb was played all the time, where it's just the hammer, like just, or the turret just shooting everybody, and the Torb is running back from the graveyard. Like, I don't think that they want that to be a competitive sort of player or a competitive sort of character in tournaments if they have a choice on which characters get more play and which don't. So I think it's designed for that to be one of the player or one of the characters that sit lower on the totem pole that aren't going to get that much look at specifically to get into competitive play.
Well, and it's a, and sorry, go ahead, Kev.
All I was going to say is nothing about the way these changes are written reads to me like they're trying to affect the competitive scene right now, except for maybe the overall alt charge. I think that's the only thing on this list that actually says we would like to see a change at the highest levels of play, right? In general senses, these are changes that will make the game feel better to average players and have very little actual impact on the high end. There's probably like an element of maybe if the Zarya change sticks, that will move her out of a core pick spot. But other than the alt stuff, most of this is for the regular everyday Overwatch players like you and I.
The last thing I wanted to say, and then we'll go ahead and wrap it up after this. But the last thing I wanted to say is this. I think it's really difficult, right? Because if you want to get these turret heroes in the competitive meta, let's just hypothetically, we'll play the hypothetical game and say that's something Blizzard wants. Blizzard wants Torbjorn and Symmetra to be played in tournaments. You can't make the turret too powerful because then you drastically nerf the utility. You need to nerf the utility and the actual hero's damage itself, right? So if you try to go at it that route, and plus it's auto aim. Should auto aim be making a serious impact on competitive Overwatch? Probably not, right? So you can't really do that. So then option number two is to make the damage from these utility players really good, which is doable, but then the turrets and the support package they bring end up sucking too, essentially, right? And the only way I see these turret heroes getting played in the competitive scene is through their utility. So they don't have to do meaningful damage necessarily. They don't have to do, their turrets don't have to have amazing auto aim with amazing damage, but we've seen it. And, you know, Symmetra has been in the competitive meta before, mainly on defense, on payload maps, but that is a meaningful thing that she brought because she brought the teleporter, right? And that's, mm-hmm. that's what she brought. Now, if this scrap change is enough for Torbjorn to where you can feasibly give everybody 75 extra armor, that's actually a fairly big deal. It's not probably large enough to go, cool, Torbjorn now sees 20% play in competitive meta. But imagine if they did something, imagine if Symmetra's support change to you know, her the shield she gives is 50 instead of 25. Like, imagine how that would change the way that she would, you know, be played, especially on those payload maps. So I mean, I don't think, just from the sense that you can't have something that shoots automatically for you be really meaningful competitively. You know, it's just
exactly, yeah, exactly.
It's Yogg-Saron, Kevin. It's Yogg-Saron.
The difference is smart players will play around turrets. You can play around a turret. You're right, though. If they get to a point where armor and shields combined were actually a significant factor in survivability, like maybe taking Torbjorn and Symmetra and using them on defense because you can keep your characters alive so much better, like maybe there's an argument to be made for that. Who knows, right? It's honestly very hard to know. I don't think that'll ever matter at a truly competitive level, but in my head, I'm already thinking like, the ability to consistently get armor from a Torbjorn could be really, really problematic for low damage heroes, right? Like, we just talked about how awesome the soldier buff would be. Torbjorn throwing out armor to a whole team kind of makes that irrelevant, right? So it's hard to say. Like, there maybe are places where there's an application for it for like regular gameplay types.
Yep. Totally agree. Well,
time is money, friends, and we're almost flat broke.
There it is. We gotta get out of here. This is a good show. This is fun. It's good to be back, right? Feels good.
It is.
Feels like
home. It's been too long.
Absolutely.
Too long. It's always been too long.
Right. Absolutely has. So let's go ahead and jump into it. Let's, Kev, give us the breakdown on the Patreon this week.
Yeah, okay, so Patreon. There's a lot to cover here. I'm going to try to do the best job I can. You know, catch me if I miss something. Number one, thank you as always to our MVPs, Adam B., Tyler H., J.A., Coral, and Tommy H. You guys are awesome. We shout out our MVPs every week on the show. Now, before I go any further, I do want to mention, when we set this Patreon up, we did not expect the incredible amount of support we got from you guys, which is a hilarious understatement of how awesome you guys have been to us as a community.
Totally.
So, right now, we are at our limit for MVPs. We couldn't have another MVP even if we wanted to. I think we're going to change that. I think we'd like to open that back up. So if there's more of you who want to get in on that, we can make that happen. If that's something that interests you, if you'd like to see us increase the number of MVP slots and you want to get into it, email us, thepayload@blizzpro.com. Let us know, and we will up the limit on the number of MVP slots on our Patreon. Second thing. We're coming up very close to our next milestone, which means we've got to do some more cool stuff for you guys as a community. We're still talking about how we want to approach additional options for stuff that we could do as we're able to raise the funds to do more. John's been talking about game nights. We've been talking about doing more streaming. We've got all sorts of ideas, but we need to know what you guys want. What's going to be great for you? Do you want to see bonus episodes? Do you want to see us producing other kinds of content? Do you want to get some sweet payload merchandise? Those are all things that are on the table right now. We haven't had a chance to update the Patreon just yet, but our intent is to tweak it so that we're going to launch the Patreon merchandise store for the payload when we get to our next milestone. Last but not least, the reason we do this segment every week is to thank our brand new patrons. So to Josh S and RP, both of you guys, welcome to the payload family. Thank you so much. This has been a lot, but if any of the rest of this made sense to you and you want to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast and find out what it's all about.
Sorry, I'm really struggling hitting the buttons. It's been a long time. It's been a long week.
I just talked over you. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
No. I was like, time is money, friends. And Kevin's still talking. Just kidding.
Kevin's still talking.
We should.
The theme of the show. Kevin's still talking.
Kevin is still talking. So
that'll be the tagline.
I need to appease chat for a second. Is that all right? We're going to appease Twitch
chat.
Yeah.
No, normally I don't totally do that. Understand.
But okay, fine. Sombra has officially been revealed. So, did I say officially revealed? I lied. What I meant to say was, you know that month and a half timer that we had, or not timer, countdown, count up thing as... this mysterious character was uploading information to Active Omnix. Guess what that led to?
Nothing.
Sombra? Nothing.
Nothing. Say it with us. On three. One, two, three.
Nothing. Nothing at all. So no updates yet, which, I mean, again, so number one, can we just say, for Blizzard to reveal a hero 2 weeks before BlizzCon was wishful thinking to start? Let's just be honest.
I think so.
So anyways, nothing. There's a few things with Bastion. There's some emails that we hacked into, you know, that's pretty interesting. Okay. Hop over to Reddit.
And
to
then
do
they
it.
Said, wait till next week.
Yep. Which will probably be another countdown to the week after that, which is BlizzCon. And then, you know,
which is frustrating for me just because I was genuinely interested in the ARG and now I've finally come full circle.
We
I'm with Kevin right now.
I was the original hater. I hated Sombra before it was cool.
Yeah. We all had a conversation on the payload or on this podcast.
On the what's the payload?
Oh, are we excited? Are we not excited?
I think
we had like a
20-minute
conversation.
I mean, this was teased during the Summer Games, that preview. The tracer code, all that stuff. It's just, I'm done.
Before the Summer Games, like we're talking July, I think June.
Yeah.
Is when, not to mention, like, I'm okay with Easter eggs being in the game for years, whatever, big deal. But an ARG, and we at least all agreed on this, that where we dissented is it going on too long? I had said no. Kevin had said yes. Kev, it's definitely going on too long now.
Yeah.
Welcome to the club. All right.
Which is weird because with Anna and Eisenwald, those releases were really good and people got really excited.
Enjoy.
You have a new hero. Like, they announced Anna, and I didn't expect Anna for another couple of weeks at least. It was on the PTR that day, I think, which was really cool.
Right.
But yeah.
So, yeah, I think they will never, I do believe they'll do an ARG again, but I think one that's longer than a month. Too long. Or at least active, like, drip, you know, droppings, little bat guanos of Sombra info. Give me a picture of a weapon. Give me part of a trailer. Give me some panels of a comic, whatever. It doesn't have to be super creative.
I don't mind if it goes on for a little while, but as long as there's like something actively being investigated still. I mean, we were stonewalled there for a couple months. I don't know. Whatever. It's coming soon.
The novelty has worn off. Yeah. That's all it is. Yeah. It's not that the character's not going to be cool. It's not that everyone's not excited. It's just the novelty of the drip feed and the wait has worn off. That's it.
Yep. All right. There you go, chat. You got your Sombra talk for the week. Jimmy, what do we got going on for iTunes reviews? Is it a Sombra week?
It's a Sombra week. There are no new iTunes reviews. Jean's so happy with himself right now. But yeah, if you would like to, go ahead and help us out by giving us a 5-star review in the iTunes store. It really helps expand the listenership on the show and brings our ratings up on the iTunes store and just exposes the show out to more viewers. And if you're listening to this, you probably are a fan of the show. So go ahead and do the 5-star review. It really helps us out a ton. Thank you so much for those of you that have done that. And we'll have some next week, I'm sure.
Yes, please. I mean, whatever makes you guys happy. Yay. All right, well, let's talk about, let's do our shout-outs for the week. We're going to do something called 10-second shout-outs. So we do your shout-outs in 10 seconds. We're going to start with Kevin.
Come hang out at BlizzCon. It's going to be a lot of fun. I would really enjoy seeing you guys. You should check out our new merch store when it goes live. And please tune in to the TESPA Collegiate Hearthstone Regionals Monday and Tuesday after BlizzCon.
Boom. Nice. Amazing. All right. 10-second shout-outs. Rosh.
Oh, God, I can't follow up. Make sure you follow me on twitch.tv/okitsrush. I will be streaming there for the rest of the week. BlizzCon is coming up. We're doing an awesome Overwatch panel on that, so stay tuned. And, yeah, not much else. I can't beat what Kevin says, so.
There it is. And, Jimmy, you get 15 seconds.
Oh, my God.
Because you didn't tick me off this show. 15 seconds.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, make sure to follow me on Twitter and Twitch at TJ Tyrant on both those networks. And just looking forward to meeting a lot of people at BlizzCon. BlizzCon is going to be awesome this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. Lots of great content there. Still don't know the closing band. Blizzard should release that with Sombra.
Yeah.
I think he added that hesitation. Like, still don't know the band because he was trying to waste up seconds of the
gotta get that 15 seconds.
He's like, giving me 15 seconds to stall.
The longest of anyone's life.
Awesome. All right,
John,
well,
10 seconds, go.
No, it's going to be way longer, and I can do that because, I push the buttons. So first and foremost, Kevin is going to be at the Hearthstone panel for Con Before the Storm at BlizzCon. That's going to be Thursday night. It's like 5:30, isn't it?
Yeah, we're right up first after the opening ceremony thing.
It's like 5:30. So that'll be going on. And then I'm going to be moderating the Overwatch panel. And we've got an incredible group of peeps, including our very own Rosh.
Rosh, you need like a fake last name too. It always just sounds so awkward to just say Rosh.
I'll think about it.
We'll think of something. What's Mercy's last
name? We'll pick one for you. Yeah, don't worry about it.
Ziegler.
Oh,
Rosh Ziegler.
Rosh Ziegler.
So we'll be there, including Veritech from the Guardians. We've got Kevin Ellis, a.k.a. Multizord. And then he's with the Cavalry. And then, oh, my God. I knew I shouldn't have started saying names because I would forget one. And then I would just be Frosty Fox. There we go. So we got them all. So they're going to be hanging out with us. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then we go, ours is at like 8:30 or 9 o'clock or something. It's the last panel for the night. So we'd love if you come hang out, support that. It'll also be streamed at alphageekradio.com, I believe. And it'll also be going up on the podcast feeds as well. So we've got that going on. Number two for me. Sorry, that was for the podcast. That doesn't count. I'm full-time streaming and podcasting now, so twitch.tv/kicktripod. I'm streaming every morning except Monday, Wednesday from 10 a.m. Mountain Time to about 2 p.m. Mountain Time, so 4 hours in the morning, and then from 5 p.m. Mountain Time to typically 8 p.m. Mountain Time in the evenings, unless we're doing a show. So I'm streaming there. I would love for you to come hang out. I think it's been a good time so far. Thank you all so much for your incredible start, your incredible support getting started, and only more amazing things to come. Let's get out of here. So you can find more Overwatch stuff throughout the week at overwatch.blizzbro.com. Our music is awesome. Thank you to Jake Buttono at jakebuttono.ca. Find us on Twitter at Payload Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/payloadpodcast. And of course, if you like the show and want to support it, you can head on over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast. Send us your emails to thepayload@bluesbro.com. We love your iTunes reviews. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and Google Podcasts. This has been episode number 43. We'll see you next week. Goodbye, everybody. Bye. See ya. Bye. We're out. This Bye. Is great. See ya. Bye.
The Payload is a production of BlizzPro. Find out more about Overwatch at overwatch.blizzpro.com. You can find your host throughout the week on social media. Find Jimmy on Twitter at DJ Tyrant, Kevin on Twitter at Lack of Realism, and John on Twitter at Kicked Tripod.